Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. Recently, Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, had the privilege of traveling around in the Holy Land, of Jerusalem, Capernaum, the Sea of Galilee, the Dead Sea, all these wonderful places we hear about in the Bible, and he's come back to tell us a little bit about what he saw and felt. And Lincoln, you've made it very clear in the first two interviews on this program, on this trip, that you felt somewhat overwhelmed by what you saw, and you began to realize that Jesus faced a lot of the same issues that we face today in some of the same atmosphere that we face today. What else did you come away from that trip with? What else is in your heart that you'd like to share with us today?
Well, let me start with another emotional moment.
Yes.
On the Sabbath, Saturday, the day that the Old Testament that Jesus had so absorbed and felt that it exemplified God and his Father's plans for man, on the Sabbath, among other places, we went to the Garden Tomb. And this was an interesting spot for me. I was a bit cynical about it, and I was interested that the guide shared it. He gave us much evidence to show that it's not even likely to have been where the Garden Tomb was, mm-hmm. that Jesus was placed in after the crucifixion. But it was, of course, in the context of many events of Jesus' life and the life of the Jewish people through the years. So there was a certain aura that we had there. Yes. Beautiful, quiet place run by a Christian organization. And we had our group of about 150 people gathered there in the garden with chairs and all gathered around together. We sang hymns, spoke about the life of Jesus, and then they passed out little olive wood, for those that don't know communion, but little olive wood shot glasses, basically,
yes,
with a fraction of an ounce of grape juice, and it's good stuff there. The grape juice doesn't taste like Welch's. And then a little scrap of bread, and we shared communion there, which, of course, is remembering, as Jesus told his disciples, remembering his life and death until he returned. And I found that really was a focusing moment, not mystical in the sense that you think you're there on the exact square foot of earth that he was on, but certainly in the environment, and recreating a sort of a mindset that he had tried in that upper room to create. I found that was powerful, and could not easily be duplicated anywhere else, I think.
And of course, we want to remind our listeners that as you were sitting there, what were you looking at? What was in front of you as the backdrop to what you were hearing the guide say?
You're looking at an empty tomb. You know, statistically, there's the smallest possibility that was the actual tomb, but it was a tomb absolutely the same as the type that Jesus was put in. And within a very short distance of where it absolutely certainly would have been anyhow. So it evoked that concept of what it was like back then. And as you're saying, the significance was it's empty today, and it was empty within 3 days of Christ's death.
Yeah.
And that's the story of Christianity. He's not here. He's risen, said the angel. So that was powerful. Now, what I'd like to connect that with, we went to the next day, actually, down to Masada.
Oh, yes.
And Masada I knew quite a bit about, but I had no idea how huge that mountain fortress is. Mm-hmm. It appeared to me about 2,000-foot rise straight out of the desert on the edge of the Dead Sea.
Mm-hmm.
You could never climb up. There is a climbing track for ambitious pilgrims. You can climb, but an army and most people could, unless there was a prepared road, could not get up there. It's incredibly steep, fragile, fragmented rock that would fall away if you grabbed at it. Mm-hmm. But at the top of that was this fortress built by Herod, complete with even a swimming pool and huge cisterns carved out of solid rock so that it could survive on water, because there's nothing up there.
Mm-hmm.
And in the whole countryside, hardly anything, except one little spring a couple of miles away that, you know, it makes the life possible for the entire area. But it's a spring that I could make a bigger spring if the plumbing broke in my house, you know. But water oozing out of the high desert cliffs. And to hear the story there about the Jewish zealots, not long after Christ's death and resurrection, there was a rebellion in Jerusalem. The Jews rose up against the Romans, and, well, we know why they did it, but why they thought they could get away with it is bizarre, because Rome was powerful and implacable. And Rome decided they would wipe them out. And even though this mountain fortress was designed by Herod to be impregnable, had its own water, it had walls that they could throw rocks down on people from thousands of foot above. Mm-hmm. The Romans brought Jewish slaves and essentially built another mountain next to this at an angle so they could roll their siege engines up. So it's sort of shades of Alexander the Great. Remember, he did the same, I think, for Carthage. Wasn't phenomenal. And on the top, our guide, who is a Jew, long living in Israel, but from England originally, and with a real BBC Shakespearean voice, I mean, he, putting his guts into it, just told us the story of this defense up there and reminded us that today, I think all Jewish soldiers, but I know the officer corps for sure, they swear their oath of loyalty to defend the Jewish state there on the top of Masada. And back in the rebellion, several hundred, I think it was, defenders faced with then the Romans about to break through. They took the hard way out in a way. And committed suicide, killed their wives and children, then killed themselves. And when the Romans came in, there were just two old women to greet them. Mm-hmm. But the charge now is that there will not be another Masada. They're not going to kill themselves. They're going to fight to the last. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether you could say that's a great dynamic for the modern world. It's sort of a recipe for Armageddon.
Yes, it is.
The plane of which was not far away.
That's right.
But it just shows the sensibilities at play. And I believe we could carry that across to our personal religious experience. You know, if religion means anything, it should mean everything. Mm-hmm. If you're on a fortress and you cave the first time, you know, a moral fortress, and you cave the first time there's pressure, that's horrible. Mm-hmm. I think we should defend our faith and our viewpoint ideologically against all comers. We should, in other words, we should remain faithful. Mm-hmm. We should maintain a fortress of faith. I just found that very, very stimulating to see that. And I know that we're going to see that played out geopolitically. Mm-hmm. And how that ends, none of us will know. Yeah. But it's quite certain that that little state of Israel, that, to be honest, is somewhat artificial in the modern world.
Yes.
Because the line back to the Jews is harder to find than the Jewish nation imagines. But I think we're going to see that worked out in a very aggressive way that is bound to bring religious conflict to the fore again in our world.
What I hear you saying, Lincoln, and is certainly my experience as well when I visited those areas, was that belief and personality are so blended in these lands. The people and what they believe are not separate. They're one. When you are talking about a people, you're talking about their belief and their faith system. When you're talking about their faith system, you're talking about those people. So when you attack a faith system, when you attack a belief, you're attacking people. As simple as I can put it, you are coming at those people. So why do they have such fervor over there? Because they don't separate that. And should we follow suit? Should our faith in God so be intertwined with us that any attack on God is an attack on us personally?
Absolutely. Mm. I mean, I think our human relationships need to be charitable toward others.
Yes.
It shouldn't instantly translate into intolerance,
right, exactly,
and violent projection of that to other people. Mm-hmm. But I think that one of the reasons that in that part of the world it's more like that is there's open spaces when you look out on a given spot. But as far as the cultures and their proximity, people are shoulder to shoulder with other people, and the stakes are high. They can't give it away.
Yes.
And there are consequences if their faith is given away or if they allow someone else's faith and lifestyle to move in on theirs. And what our guide said about Masada, I think, is true. He said, the United States, concerned about what happened in Iraq or Afghanistan, and he says, you send soldiers over there and you've lost a few people. But he says, it's a pittance compared to what we've lost here. He says, here, he says, a family loses a son or a daughter, they lose everything.
Yes, yes.
You know, it's not just a little victory and a little sadness in one neighborhood in a country. This is visceral, the very survival of the people they see at stake. And you can see it because it's part of your little social circle. And I can see that, you know, Israel's, I think, 8 million people, not huge, although I don't think I know 8 million people. But it's closer to, and certainly, and you get into the city and the neighborhoods, I think people are more connected. In fact, I should say, I don't know that I even said on this program, was we flew back from Israel on the 747 after a nice experience, and we settled down in the seats, and the voice over the intercom, I think it was the head stewardess, welcomed us, and the first thing she said, she says, "Dear President and passengers, da-da-da," and then went on. And I looked at the person next to them, and they said, "Oh, I think that was a mistake." And I said, "I don't think so. This is a little country. Yeah. The president's on the plane."
Oh, my.
And the president of Israel was on the plane, I found out later, in the first class. But I liked the way she, and she said it several times on the flight, "Dear President." Mm. That's not formal. That's like, "Dear uncle,"
yes,
you know.
Yes, yes.
A family member. You know, that might be somewhat unique to that particular culture, but I'd like to think it's part of a community and a religious sensibility that they share. We say, "Dear God." You know, as Jesus says, when you say Father, Abba, there needs to be a personal connection. There needs to be something beyond just religious activities. It needs to be recognized this is our life, our survival, our being. Mm-hmm. And so that was inspiring for me to see those little signs of that there in Israel. Mm-hmm. Now, we got a few more minutes.
We have a minute and a half.
There's two sides to it. And on the way back, I also read a story about a Palestinian village in the War of Independence, in essence, in 1948. And the Jews inadvertently massacred a whole village there and deported the rest of them. I know when I talk to Muslims, there's another side of it that they see, and you know, who's totally right and who's totally wrong? It's probably neither. But in total, as a Bible-believing Christian, to go back to that part of the world, fought over by all factions, I was able to see very inspiring connections to my life that I think could be put to good use. We don't want religious war, but we want religious victory and religious enthusiasm and religious involvement in each of our lives, and I think that will make a world of difference.
Oh, my. Wonderful insights that you gained there, Lincoln. Thank you so much for sharing those with us.
My pleasure.
Lincoln Steed is editor of Liberty Magazine, and he's been telling us some of his experiences in the last three shows here, some of his experiences about his recent visit to the Holy Land, to where Jesus walked. What wonderful, wonderful insights. Our website is open and ready for you to visit, libertymagazine.org. You can read back issues of the magazine. You can also subscribe to Liberty Magazine. Lincoln Steed has his blogs there as well, wonderful insights. And I think we'll be hearing a little bit more about the Holy Land visits in those blogs. So look forward to that. That's libertymagazine.org. Until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Lincoln Steed inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call Three Angels Broadcasting Network at 618-627-4651 or email us through our website at 3abn.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.